It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And we'd like to welcome Cecil Harvell, who's on the phone with us this morning. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Very fine, very fine. And Dressed for Court is in Wes Collins, is in studio right now. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning, Mike.
Gentlemen, what's our topic of discussion today?
Excuse me, Mike.
Yeah, sure.
Last week we discussed with you the many, many spousal rights that exist in the state of North Carolina. In other words, laws that permeate, if you will, touch and surround the rights and obligations between spouses. In other words, once there is a certificate of marriage. Now, North Carolina is not a common law marriage state, and so we do need to find and discover a certificate of marriage. But as Wes and I know very clearly, once there is a certificate of marriage on record in some place, and folks are legally married, wow, are there a lot of rights and obligations and entitlements that flow from that legal relationship. And so we touched and concern on some last week, and we're going to continue to touch and concern on some of those issues this week.
Very good. You know, just the point, I guess the same could be said for a couple living together, not married, but thinking heck, I've been here for 20 years with the same person that I am married. And if things go south or one dies, there's, you know, as far as the assets and all that, that's a whole other can of worms because you're not married if you ever run into that situation.
Right. You know, we talked about, you know, some of those rights of the surviving spouse last week. Touched on that a little bit. You know, of course, you can disinherit anyone you want to. You don't have to leave things to your kids. You don't have to leave things to other loved ones, but you cannot disinherit your spouse. In North Carolina, that's the way that works. It's the way it works in most states. But what does that mean? It doesn't mean that you have to put them in the will or so on and so forth. I mean, you can have a will that says, I absolutely leave my spouse nothing. I hate him. I hate her, whatever
right.
It may be.
Yeah.
But if you are in fact married at the time of death, then there would be a right to the elective share claim, that's a claim that has to be made within a certain amount of time. And then there's, the year's allowance. There's also the intestate share, which would be the amount that passes, through intestacy in the event, you know, there would not be a will.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's those rights that you look at to make a determination as to what that surviving spouse is entitled to. So you really can't disinherit your spouse. Now, there are ways to deal with that, you know, in the event you have a situation where there's all kind of situations that present themselves when, let's say, that you're in a long-term marriage, but, you know, the marriage fails and the parties are not together anymore, but you're still married, and if for whatever reason you're not able to get that divorce, and there's lots of reasons why you can't get that divorce. Let's say one of the parties has become incompetent, mm-hmm. and adjudicated incompetent, and they're just stay together, you know, not really physically together, not living together, but still married.
Right.
Well, if the party who's incompetent passes away, then the other spouse is going to have that elective share right. Well, the guardians could, you know, under that scenario, this is one of hundreds of situations we've dealt with that kind of circle around this type of situation, spousal rights. You know, you could put together what's called a elective share trust agreement so that instead of the surviving spouse receiving the actual, let's say, 50% of the total net assets, if it's a 15-year or longer marriage, that's the way the numbers break down on that, the surviving spouse would only receive the income off of the elective share amount. So there's a way to plan around it being such a such a gut punch,
mm-hmm.
you know, potentially for the kids from the previous marriage,
sure.
for the person who's adjudicated incompetent. So there's all different types of situations that present themselves like that. But what you have to do, you know, speaking to those listeners out there with these type of situations, is, you know, you don't sit back and wait and hope everything is going to be okay. You get a little bit of information, as we all do as we go through life, whether we get it from our neighbor or get it from this radio program or get it from, with a grain of salt, the media.
Yeah.
You know,
buyer
beware.
That's
a different conversation these days with all that going on. And, you know, you put those facts before someone who knows what they're doing, such as, you know, Mr. Harvell and myself, who deal with these issues at our law firm, or another law firm who deals with these issues, to make sure that you have a plan to deal with these types of things.
Yeah. It seems like, Cecil, the law is very clear on spousal rights and marriage, but I guess the people involved in the marriage, sometimes it's a gray area, a lot of confusion. As Wes said here, you just can't go along through life without having that plan and wait for that when the time comes when you have to act on it, maybe a little bit too late. It's better to have some options out there.
I think what throws people in this context is that folks can agree and just be, you know, so many times Wes and I see clients, they come in and they say, you know, my husband and I agree that rights are that our assets are going to pass to our children from a prior marriage. I mean, we've discussed this. You know, we both lost our spouses from cancer when we were in our 60s, and we are so happy to have found each other, and we now have married and remarried into our second relationship, and we've discussed this, you know, Cecil, and we know that our assets are going to pass to our respective children, and that's what we've agreed to. So go ahead and make the will consistent with our agreement that our assets are going to pass to our children from a prior marriage. And they just really are quite shocked that they then are told, you know, hopefully by Wes and I in a polite and ginger way, that the law in North Carolina is going to provide otherwise. And these are the repercussions of that. Sometimes what is next said is that, well, but my spouse won't file for the elective share. As I've already told you, you know, Cecil, we've agreed that that's not going to happen in our lives. Even our children know that. Well, the problem with that comment, Mike, is that sometimes it's not a matter of being up to the surviving spouse. We have files in our office where, you know, we see these folks, and then let's project out now 10, 12 years. And one of those folks has died, and the second, the surviving spouse is not of sound mind. They are now being controlled, their affairs by the durable power of attorney of their daughter and or son. And so even though they, back in our office 10 years ago, had the intention not to file the elective share and said that they would not, their child now under the agency arrangement, under a financial power of attorney, files for the elective share. One could even argue that potentially that would be the fiduciary duty of the child, who is the agent under the power of attorney. So as we see here, these files can get very complicated very, very quickly. Yes, as we're discussing, there are routes around this. Let's talk about some others. We can arrange for a postnuptial agreement. When these folks come in and make these affirmations about what their agreements are concerning their assets to their children from a prior marriage, then maybe one of the things we need to do is to discuss that we reduce that to writing in the form of a postnuptial agreement. Possibly the client got a prenuptial agreement, a before marriage agreement, and if they did, then that certainly is wonderful to hear, because that would have waived this elective share right. And then, of course, yes, as Wes was mentioning, there are certain trusts that we can utilize that would take care of the elect to share and maintain the integrity of the net worth for the children of the prior marriages. But to just look the other way, put our head in the sand, and stand on a verbal agreement or understanding in the family is just not going to be sufficient.
You know, it's interesting. A couple points you bring out, Cecil, and I'm harking back to a conversation we had several weeks ago, and I asked Wes, do people still do prenups and postnups? And his answer was, not enough of them do. We're coming up on the holidays, and these are awkward conversations. These aren't easy conversations to have with your older parents if you're in that situation. But coming up on the holidays, is this a good time of the year to have that conversation? How does one broach that subject with their older parent who might be in that situation you described, getting a second marriage when they're in their 70s, perhaps even 80s?
Well, you bring up a very good point, and it is a good time of year to have these discussions, and they're not. They're many times awkward, not necessarily comfortable, but critically important. If folks can have the conversation, then with their children, then that's great. We, of course, would also, and it's often, Mike, just to put this out there, I had a client call me actually last week to arrange an appointment for me to meet with their children when they are coming now into town over the holiday. Mm-hmm. And so these particular clients are wanting we, the lawyer, to kind of meet with the family, if you will, and kind of explain the circumstances and the plan of action that has happened in their file. And so, that is an option. That folks have.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in an awkward situation and you don't feel but so comfortable approaching these subjects with your children, well, then maybe your lawyer will have a meeting, a family conference with you and with your children, and begin to open up the lines of communication on these issues.
And Wes, I'm wondering for a family that has their one parent died now, the other parent has remarried and is married, is it ever too late to have a postnuptial agreement in a marriage?
No, it's never too late. I mean, obviously, that can be sometimes a awkward type conversation.
Sure. Yeah.
As well. But, you know, if you're talking about the second marriage, I mean, obviously, you know, second, third, fourth marriages, kids from a previous marriage, that's like one of the first questions you ask when you sit down with folks, you know, okay, what full name, where do you reside, how many marriages have there been, how many kids are there, and you got to get those notes together as to who these kids are and who they belong to.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because, you know, your typical first marriage, husband, wife, two kids, the American family, you know, as we have known it to be in most cases, the estate planning looks a lot different for folks like that than the former when we were talking about your previous marriages and kids from a previous marriage. So, yes, in the event you're going into a second or third marriage, there's kids from a previous marriage. First of all, let's talk prenup before we jump into the marriage, because things really dramatically change. They may not change all that much in your life, you know, as far as just your living arrangement, as far as how things have been before girlfriend, boyfriend in their 60s or 70s decide to get married. But legally, they change a lot whether you know it or not.
Yeah.
Okay, so handling that with a prenup is very important. In the event that wasn't done and the parties, the husband and wife, do agree that, let's make sure that we our estates, when we pass away, pass where we want them to, and they agree, then postnup is the right thing to do as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that's, you know, obviously if the parties can agree and can put it down on paper, something that's binding that we all know what we're doing, then that is the best scenario for both sides.
let's take a break on that note. We'll come back with more of our talk with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins. You can have a conversation by calling them at the office at the firm, 252-726-9050. You can also go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. We're talking about spousal rights, and we're with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins. I have a question for you, Wes. We're talking about prenups, and typically in a marriage, a first marriage or a second marriage, who is it a one size fits all? Who should get a prenup in a first marriage? What do you look at when you think they should have a prenup?
Right. So, if you're in your typical situation where the folks are in their, say, 20s or early 30s these days, first marriage, and you're talking about, you know, when do we need a prenup? This is first marriage, obviously, no kids, none of the second marriage baggage that comes along, you know, with the kids, that type of thing. You know, it's really not socially kind of normal in our society for just your typical marriage to have the prenup, you know, with the first marriage and for that to be a big part of it. But where we should talk about that would be, you know, let's say we have a circumstance where we have one side of the equation brings a lot more to the marriage than the other side of the equation from a financial standpoint. I mean, let's say that the wife has a family business. She's involved in the family business, owns stock in the family business, and is worth a lot. Let's say husband is, you know, coming out of, finishes school and has debt, like a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. When we have kind of a different, level, a significant different level of assets coming to the marriage, that would be an appropriate time to discuss a prenup under those type circumstances, because that'll deal with, prenup typically is going to deal with a divorce type situation or a death type situation. But you want to have that conversation kind of early.
Yeah.
You don't want to have it the week before, getting married. The wedding and all that money's been spent and all that, and the stress and the wedding dress and everybody's, you know, all the invitations have gone out. Let's start that kind of early, Mike. You know, Cecil might have some other suggestions when the first marriage type situation might necessitate conversation regarding a prenup.
Yeah, it gets down to communication, Cecil, and oftentimes it's not the easiest one to start. But what do you say to that?
Well, I agree. I mean, I think that one of the places that we see the need for prenup in kind of that very first marriage, we actually have a file like that in the office right now, is a young guy, you know, getting married for the first time, but his family has a significant family business, and his father and mother have placed him in a position of authority in that business and have transferred right much of the ownership of that business over to him, so that he feels that he can really be the CEO and the president of that company, and it's doing quite well. And so that's a situation where, for the sake of, you know, his children, eventually the grandchildren of the founders of that company, that there be some arrangements be made so that if for some reason they were to get married, and then if he were to be in an accident or something of that nature, these assets would not pass to, you know, what at that time could be a very young spouse, Mike, who everyone would want to get remarried, this young girl, and or even if they have children, and that the assets would be protected for either the back to the family or in trust for, you know, the lineal descendants of the founders of the company, in trust for the children. So those are some circumstances that we see from time to time where young folks would enter into a prenuptial agreement. One thing I might add about the prenuptial agreement, and you can hear it loud and clear in today's conversation, the three of us, is that you know, the prenuptial agreement is not always about, in fact, in our office, it hardly ever is about divorce. Yes, those provisions are in the document, but Wes and I, in the client base that we see, we are usually much more concerned, as is the client, with the estate consequences. And even the during life, who is the guardian, who is the power of attorney, all of these presumptions that the law creates for married folks, modifying those in writing so that they don't necessarily apply. I would say almost, it just is kind of interesting, almost all of the prenups that are floating through my desk are touching and concerning the priority for the prenup or the estate related mm-hmm. issues, things that we're talking about today. Yeah. Not so much the divorce issue.
You should be in it for the long.
And yet just the opposite, I think, is what I'm trying to say, is that just the opposite of that is kind of like the assumption with people.
Yeah.
The minute you mention prenup,
right,
even to these clients that I'm talking about, the wife and or the husband, they immediately begin saying, oh, well, we're not going to get a divorce. We don't want a document like that. I mean, that's just not going to happen to us. Well, you know, that may be very true. The purpose of the prenup is not necessarily, it's almost like I explain it to clients. There's a Roman numeral one and there's a Roman numeral two. No, Roman numeral one is that maybe the prenup addresses divorce issues. Roman numeral two, however, is that it also addresses estate-related issues. And let me say one more thing. A prenup is an agreement. It's a contract. And a contract can say anything the parties choose to say, absent something that violates public policy. We have had prenups in our office where some of the divorce provisions, Roman numeral one provisions, if you will, Michael, are not necessarily either included in the document or are not necessarily as drawn out in the document, because that really isn't the purpose of the document. But the estate-related provisions are quite extensive.
I think you bring up a good point, and I can understand people's belief that it's a pejorative when you say prenup, but marriage, by its definition, is in for the long haul, for life, you know, life and death. It's not for the short term. Oh, I'm going to get married and the next year probably get divorced. That's not the plan. But so I think you shed good light on what the purpose of a prenup is. It's for the estate planning. You can put whatever provisions you want into it. Like you said, it's a contract. So whatever content you bake into it, that's your choice.
Right. The way I explain it sometimes, Mike, is, you know, it takes the entire book of North Carolina general statutes relating to marriage and just throws it away. You know, the state of North Carolina makes a lot of decisions relative to what happens in the event of divorce, what happens in the event of death when you have a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a prenup that negates all of that, then it's not the state of North Carolina that's making those decisions anymore. Is you and your spouse,
yeah,
relating to your estate planning and relating to how you structure assets. So, but you have to be careful as well, though, because you could be in a situation where if you have a prenup and then all the assets are in one spouse's name and the other spouse is taking care of the kids and not accumulating any assets, and then there's a death of the spouse that has more assets but a failure to do estate planning, then that one spouse could be left, you know, without being taken care of.
Yeah.
Where if there wasn't a prenup, then they'd be entitled to their elective share, intestate share, years allowance, those type of things. So it's really both things dovetail together, prenup, but also have your estate plan in order with regard,
sure,
to your will, if you need a trust, power of attorney, those type of things.
Very good. Cecil, we have about 20, 30 seconds left. I'll let you wrap up.
I think, Mike, that, you know, all of these issues fall into that great advice column that Wes and I just give constantly, which is, you know, make your appointment to go talk with your lawyer. Most lawyers do not charge an initial consultation. Put out on the table what your issues are. The lawyer will be able to recognize some potential issues, some,
yeah,
potential things that need to be addressed, that need to be documented. don't make assumptions. Just get the advice that you need and then take it from there.
Great advice and a great topic of discussion. I'm sure we'll have more in the future. Thank you, Cecil. Thank you, Wes.